Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Ali Mignone, Head of People, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Theater Projects. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, thanks. I appreciate you letting me be here, Mario.
And I didn't even ask you if I pronounced your name correctly before.
You were very close. You were very close.
Okay.
Mignone. It's like a filet mignon. It's got E on the end.
Okay, Ali Mignone. Thank you. Thank you.
You're great.
So excited to have you for a couple of reasons. You know, we typically talk to, like, you know, marketing agencies, Fortune 500s, really interested in kind of theater projects. I'm a big believer in how important the arts, theater are to communities, bringing people together. So want to learn more. Tell us a little bit about theater projects and what you all are doing.
Sure. Well, you said it perfectly. You know, the performing arts bring communities together, and we believe that really firmly. And our work is as the theater consultant on new and renovated buildings for theater, for performing arts in general. But for us, theater really is everywhere, and anywhere people gather to tell a story has theater in it. And so we think that our work happens in places outside traditional theaters as well. So museums, but also community centers and municipal buildings, commercial buildings. So our staff come from the performing arts usually, mostly technical theater, but also we have venue managers and stage managers, former actors. And our work is to make sure that the buildings are operating as they need to operate to do this, to do these art pieces. And so we spend a lot of time with architects, but also with users, people who are going to end up being in the buildings at the end, either performing or working behind the scenes. And we also think about the audience and how they interact and how communities can come together to either participate in storytelling themselves or receive storytelling and then share it.
And so walk me through, like, how an engagement happens. Is it like, let's say a city has a building that they're thinking about launching some sort of production, would they then reach out to you and you help them put that together from you know, just a building that's sitting there to a place that can host some sort of theater project?
Absolutely. It can come from that. It often does come that way. A municipal, a city will call and say, hey, we have this building that used to be a bank. We also have four or five community performing arts groups or other community groups who need a space. Can you help us? What do we do? And we can help from the very, very beginning of envisioning what that space could be used for and what it could become, all the way through cutting the ribbon and after, how it's used. We can also work, and we often do work with owners of land or with the organizations themselves who say, hey, we want to build something new. And we don't know how to go about that. Can you help us? Like, yep, absolutely. Our answer is always yes and, right? Yes, of course we can help you. And we can start right from the beginning and help an organization find the right architect or the right other design team members. We can help them put the group together. We can help them decide what their strategic plan is, which all that happens before any kind of design. You have to do a strategic plan. Or sometimes we are hired in the middle of a project, and an architect will team with us, and we will present to the group who's doing a new building or a renovation, and we'll say, hey, we understand you've gotten this far, and now you need design work and building, and we're happy to participate in that. So we in a, you know, these projects can be 5-10 years long, so we can join it at any part in the process.
Wow, that's interesting, and that must be that just would be so satisfying to see, you know, projects just come to life from whatever stage they're in.
It's so cool, and I know that because our staff tends to come from the performing arts, where show, you build it in 3 weeks, you put it up, it's gone in a month. You know, things are ephemeral in the performing arts, as they should be in a lot of ways. But when you move into the construction and architecture world, the projects, they take so long that when you get to the end, all that opening night excitement is built up over, 5 years. And so our staff is always thrilled to get to that end stage where we go and do a commissioning on a project. So everything's built, everything's in the building, and we push all the buttons and run all the ropes and sit in all the seats. We just make sure everything's working in the performing arts space or in the experiential space the way we intended it to work. And then opening night, and that's probably everybody's favorite, is when a building opens, and then that period afterwards when we remain available to our users for, 2 years later, they say we've lost the book that tells us how to fix this thing, and we help them find it. We're always a resource for that building and those users.
Can you tell us about a recent project that just launched?
Oh gosh, we recently opened a project down in Florida, the Dr. Phillips Center, which I think had been on our books for, gosh, I want to say 20 years, because it went through a variety of strategic planning phases, which we participated in. So, we did strategic planning, and then, I wasn't with the company that long. So I think either funding fell apart or visions changed, or they couldn't buy the land they wanted. Anyway, so the kind of projects come and go like that over time. And when it came in its current form, and we were asked to continue to participate on the project, that was a big deal. We were really excited, and that opened last year. It's a beautiful building, and it's going to serve that community fantastically well. And we're just really proud of it.
That's amazing. Congrats on that. And let's jump in to talk a little bit about your role and your staff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like there's so many people involved, right? You have the people that you have on staff. And then I imagine you're working with so many different vendors, either consultants, other businesses, since you're across, you're doing work all across the nation. So what's your role? Are you hiring people, in charge of hiring people internally and also externally? Like, tell us more about that and how diversity plays a role in that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, my role as head of people, diversity, and inclusion is a new one for theater projects. We've never had a dedicated human resources person, although I have been with the company 17 years, and I've been in a variety of roles for theater projects, and each of those roles has had a human resources component. It just didn't have the title. So we discovered, I think in 2018 or 2019, that as a 30-person company, we really did need that dedicated internal human resources function, someone whose job it was to do all those pieces. And so I stepped into that role and asked us to include a DE&I portion of that. That's, it was important to our staff. We've been talking about it a lot as individuals, but also as colleagues, talking about what was happening in the world. And it felt important to not only Theater Projects as a company, but the members of Theater Projects as a company, that there was someone who they could turn to ask questions or make suggestions of. And so my role truly is internal. I don't work with any of our vendors or directly with our clients. So my role is internal, and I do recruiting for all three offices in the U.S. And try to keep us talking. I guess that's really the crux of my DE&I role.
And I think it's fantastic to have you on, someone that's started that role from the ground up. Like, what are some resources that you use to get that off the ground, given that it's a new function there at Theater Projects?
That's a great question. I remember when I did start, I was like, oh gosh, where do I go? Like, how do you start something like this? And having had human resources in most of my professional life in some way, I felt, I've got these things, you know, let's get these things scheduled. We get these things in the bag. We've got onboarding. We've got, you know, background checks, all the policy. We're going to work on policies. Okay. Now, where do we go to find out about DE&I? And I started with SHRM, the Society for Human Resources Management, and read through as much of their material as I could find. But, you know, they are a society focused specifically on human resources. And while that had benefit to me, I needed to go deeper. And honestly, I just spent a lot of time online. I spent a lot of time poking at articles that are interesting to me, or going down rabbit holes in, you know, LinkedIn articles. Like, hey, who said that? Who's that person? Where did they come from? And when an employee brings an issue to me or a concern, I work to find different perspectives on that specific concern so I can come back to the employee or go to our leadership and say, hey, I see 5 or 6 different ways of potentially dealing with this. Which one aligns best with Theater Project's vision and Theater Project's goals? And let's see if we can't integrate that in some way into our work. So I don't have a specific spot I go, but I spend a lot of time on the internet.
No, and that's great. I mean, and that's one of the reasons also we started the podcast, right? We wanted people in your position, people that have been doing it at large corporations, small corporations, because we've realized that there isn't a lot of podcast audio on that. So this is super helpful to have your perspective. And I'm curious, you know, I've talked to people in similar positions as you in larger companies, and they, you know, have to put down really kind of structured documents or objectives. I know being a small business owner, right, you always have multiple hats. It's hard to put that kind of stuff together. Like, where do you fall in terms of policies? I mean, are you writing down objectives? Are there just kind of overarching missions that you're aligning to for Theater Projects? Like, tell us more about that, kind of the policy side of it.
I love that you're digging into the parts of my work where I'm like, how do I do this? Yeah. So I recently completed, the certification for Senior Certified Professional at SHRM. And part of that study, and it was probably, you know, I studied for 6 months because I needed to, was about exactly what you just said, how to formalize and document any plan of any kind, whether it's a DE&I or if it's a recruiting plan or an overall financial plan for merging multiple companies. And these were global level things I was learning about, and I was fascinated by it. But I also understood that although I now know how to do these things, I'm certified at the global level, if I was the human resources person for Nike, I would use those tools the way I've been trained to use them. But because I'm the head of human resources for a human resources department of one and a company of only 30 people in the United States, although we do span 8 states, so I have to keep the employment laws of 8 states kind of in my brain as we're doing things, there's no need for that level of formalization when I'm the only one doing the stuff. So I use that formal language or those formal notes to myself only when I need to present something to the board and I'm asking them either for support or for money. And then I'll do that. But honestly, I try to keep it to one page. This is not a place where I need to be giving them, you know, 40-page documents. It's a one-page hit because these guys are busy. They're not just our board. They're also our owners of the company, and they are active practitioners in our firm. So they don't have a lot of time to read through me writing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of words on things that interest me. So I have to make sure that if I do that formal stuff, which I do pretty rarely, then I keep it as brief as humanly possible.
Yeah, no, I'm in that same boat. and I'm curious, you know, you're a department of one, so mm-hmm. That's difficult, right? I know how that is being a founder. What's your support network? Do you have other professionals that you rely on at different companies? Are you talking to people internally? Like who are you bouncing ideas off of?
As a pretty new member of SHRM, the Society for Human Resources Management, I do turn to their website for ideas on where to look. I'm not yet connected to people in that organization yet to bounce stuff off of, but I can look through their article archives and find that kind of guidance. I look more to them for legal guidance or best practices. When I'm looking for bouncing DE&I organized kind of ideas, we have a DE&I advisory committee that was recently started at Theater Projects. And so I look to my colleagues and our team, and that we started that committee so that the voices of the people who are actively doing our work and living under our policies and receiving the communication that we make internally, that they have a voice in not only how those are received, but in how they're created, how they're structured, so that they can say, hey, did you know that this policy is really great for 10 people, but the other 20 of us have this issue with it? And so that's part of why that committee was formed, but also I was really impressed to hear that more than half of my company was interested in talking about DE&I as in general and seeing where we can make a difference, not only in our company, but in the world. So that's where I bounce my ideas. You know,
that's great. And that's great to hear you have a DE&I committee. What are some things that 2023 that you're hoping to accomplish from a DE&I perspective for Theater Projects?
Well, the committee is preparing an ask of the board for support and for some guidance so that we can rewrite our company level DE&I statement. You know, we have a DE&I statement that goes in our proposals, and it's how we as a company express our support for our communities inside and outside of ourselves. And as a group, we felt that, okay, it's time to revitalize this. Who should do that? Well, the committee's going to do it, but we need the board support. So that's our first hit is asking them for that support. And then we're also talking about bringing in an outside consultant, because consultants always like to hire consultants, right? to bring in an outside company to do some probably some unconscious bias training with us as a company to help us have difficult conversations and also help us understand where we're blind to our biases. As we work, especially with arts organizations that have different affinities, it's really important to us that we understand how to ask questions respectfully and also how to honestly say, we don't know, please tell us what it is that you need from us and how we can support you. Because that's always what we want to do with our clients is we're here to support you and your vision. Let us help you. At the same time, we want to make sure that we're not asking our clients to educate us in their specific areas. So we have we have work to do. And that's part of what 2023 is going to be for us.
That's great. And you brought up something I didn't think of, but how your clients, right? And I think we're seeing a shift that most companies that hire other companies want to see that the companies that they're hiring do have DE&I in place. And I'm wondering, you know, theater, I don't know much about the theater business, but I know that there's some diversity issues that need to be worked through. I'm curious, you know, are you seeing more of your clients coming to you with a, you know, with a DE&I mandate or ask of some sort?
We are. And I think what we're seeing and expecting to see more of is clients saying to us, you know, thank you for your advice. Your work is excellent. We love the advice. But how are you putting this advice into action in your company? What are you doing? You're telling us to do these things. How are you doing those in reality? And right now, I'm not sure that we have focused answers for that. And so I'd love to see 2023 allow us to say, well, here's what we're doing with this. Here's how we're managing this. These are the outreach elements we're doing for recruiting. Here's how we've changed language in our policies to be gender inclusive, things like that. And although we have put some of those things in place, having a dictionary to turn back to say, oh, here's what we have done, or having a way to express that cleanly and concisely to our clients is important. And for everybody in the company to be able to do that. I can tell you right now, here are the things I changed in the policy guide. Here's this thing and that thing. But could one of our senior consultants would they be able to turn around and say that to a client who asks, well, you've recommended in our strategic plan that we rewrite our policy guide. How have you rewritten your policy guide? They didn't do it, so they don't know. So I think a lot of that is internal communication as well.
That's great. And I love that. And I think that's an issue with small, large, medium organizations. Yeah. that, you know, not everybody can talk about it. And I think that's when you know you've really prioritized DE&I, is if you can get everybody to speak, maybe not as at the level that you have, right? But sure. I just some, yeah, you know, missions, high level things.
Exactly.
Yeah, and also I want to say one thing I've heard in these conversations as well is relying on vendors is so powerful. Like you can bring in outside experts and it's always difficult kind of pointing out what your own biases are, and having, yeah, other vendors is I think is really critical in any DE&I journey.
I agree 100%. We talked about that at our advisory committee where I said, look, I can't provide a DE&I seminar for this group. For first of all, I'm not an expert. And I think that's the first thing anybody who's in charge of DE&I at a company might consider is, what is your actual level of expertise? I don't have a level of expertise in this. What I have is a remit from my board and my general manager to provide an avenue for this. And I have a real interest and a desire to learn. And that's what I can present. And so I said to the, you know, to our committee, I was like, I can't do this work, but we can bring in somebody who does this and knows how to manage a group of like us, whoever we, you know, whatever, however we're made up, and help us achieve what we're trying to achieve. And so for me, I don't feel like I need to be the expert. What I need to be is the conduit for expertise. And that's how I approach understanding my own ignorance.
No, I love your approach. And I think people can learn from that approach, right? I think there's always a tendency to want to be the expert, to want to have the answers, but doing the research and relying on vendors, asking people, putting together committees. I mean, you're doing everything right. So
well, thank you for that. I will tell you, much of it is quite new. So I'm glad you're talking to me now and not a year and a half ago when I was still kind of doing the spinning the wheels and struggling with where do I focus my attention? How do I manage this? So it has seemed to coalesce relatively recently. So your timing is amazing, Mario.
Great. We knew that. That's why we had you on. So what's next to 2023 just in general? What's theater projects got going on this year that you'd like to share?
Well, let's see. We are continuing to grow, and we'll be hiring in the next. You know, we'll be hiring a few people over the course of 2023, and for me in those hiring pushes some of the issues we're finding. And I think you mentioned that earlier, is that in our industry, not only theater, but also architecture and construction, as many industries are experiencing, we don't have a lot of folks, we don't have a lot of diversity that's already present in the industry. And so my goal over the next couple of years is to spend time introducing the idea of theater consulting, because whoever knew what a theater consultant was? I didn't hear about it until long after I had a professional theater career and was well into my working life. I didn't know what they was. But what I'd love to see is me doing some reach out into not only universities and colleges, but also into community theaters, into spaces where people don't yet know that the skills they have or the skills they can achieve could lead them to a career in this kind of industry. And I think that's where we're going to find people who have different perspectives than what we currently have in our industry and in our current company, and have new voices and re-energize our buildings and our communities and our spaces for story. There's a lot of people who are fascinating out there who are telling stories. Would really like to reach them and say, would you like to help other people tell stories?
I love that. And I mean, it's like broadening, right? The background of people that can come in. And I think that's such an important part of DE&I. We have this narrow scope that we've picked up over the years of who someone in theater works in or whatever industry, right. And opening that up really can lead to significant change. So
agreed. We used to say, as I was looking for people, for new hires, it was very narrow. I'd say, you need to have a degree in theater arts or in architecture, and need to have worked in professional theater, preferably as a technician in some way or another, or as a venue manager. These jobs are relatively privileged. They don't pay particularly well in most cases. So it's an interesting thing to say you have to be privileged to take a job that doesn't pay a lot. But when you're coming through a university degree and you come out and you're working, you're working for relatively low pay in an industry you love, that's relatively privileged. So as I'm looking at these and saying, not only do you have to have this theater degree, you have to have worked in this low paying job for a certain number of years, and you have to have these software skills that you couldn't afford to buy the software on your own. No theater I've ever met has Revit software. It's not useful for the theater, but also it's incredibly expensive. But we use it almost exclusively for our work. So those things don't all go together. And so as we kind of upended a lot of what we think we need in a new employee, we've discovered that there are so many people out there whose perspective and experience would really benefit our clients and our company. And we need to figure out how to make room, not only figure out how to reach them and ask them to join us, but make room for them at theater projects and provide them the skills that they can easily get once they join us. If you don't know Revit, that's fine. We'll teach you. That's great. We'll send you to a class.
Allie, thank you so much. Believe it or not, we're at our time.
It's been
great conversation, and it's gone by so quickly. I appreciate it, and thank you everybody for listening. If people want to learn more about theater projects, could you share the URL for us?
Absolutely. It's theaterprojects.com, and we spell theater theatre.
Thanks again for joining, Allie.
Thanks, Mario. Appreciate it.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.